Energy Stew with Peter Roth, Thursdays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And in this show, we're going to interview a doctor, a medical doctor, who has taken his work not only to the far out, but also to the far in, because he's discovered it's all a hologram. And we're going to hear all about that. He's the author of a book called The Human Hologram. And I'm so glad we have Dr. Robin Kelly as a guest today. Hello, Robin.
Hello, hello, Peter. Lovely to be on the show.
Thank you. I'm so glad you could be. And you're calling all the way from that. And congratulations on the publication of your new book.
Yes. And it's just it's going to be due out. It should have been due out a month or so ago, but it's in fact been a bit delayed. So it's imminent. It's coming out in the next two or three weeks, my publishers tell me. So people hang on, please.
And it's not your first book. It's your third book. And the last one,
yeah.
The Human Antenna, won some terrific awards, including Best Science Book at the 2008 USA National Best Book Awards. So you've really done some wonderful, made some wonderful contributions with your writing, and I'm so looking forward to this one. I know I couldn't get an advanced copy because they weren't available yet, and yet I know we have a lot to talk about, because this is a field that is all about energy stew.
Well, I do. I do appreciate your program as well. I've listened to it, and I think it's you have a unique contribution as well, and I'm so excited to be talking to you.
Well, thank you so much. Now, the concept of a hologram, you learned about it when you were working with acupuncture in the ear, right?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, and this was in the early 80s. I discovered acupuncture, I still work as a regular doctor, as a general practitioner. But very soon after I started in my general practice, I started to do acupuncture. And I really was impressed how quick the results were, but also how complete some of the results were. You know, you may be treating somebody with a sore neck or a sore back, but, you know, they would phone the next day and say, wow, you know, I haven't had a sleep like that since I was a teenager. And, you know, there were all these other lovely effects that were affecting the body that made this so intriguing to me. So I started to study Chinese medicine. One of the techniques I was using was ear acupuncture. And I found that the great thing about ear acupuncture was that within a few moments, pains could disappear. Also, nausea in pregnancy, for instance.
And not just, you know, not just ear pain.
not just ear pain, but, you know, back pain. And that if you followed this homunculus, or this small microsystem, the whole body being represented in the ear. In fact, the oracle represented looks like, if you look at your outside part of your ear, the pin of the oracle, you can imagine a baby, a fetus upside down. And that's the rough guide to the whole body. And I found that, you know, you had to be terribly precise, you know, that if you were a millimeter or so out, you know, you'd get a different response, but the actual part that corresponded, say, to the low back would be tender to a little point finder. And I found that if you treated that, first of all, the person sitting in front of you didn't have to take their clothes off. They had to possibly suspend belief and invite you to do this. But if they allowed that to happen, then often the results would be even quicker than they would realize. You know, it would actually take a little bit of time for them to realize that the pain had gone. And I became sort of determined to try and understand why this is so. And of course, there's been tremendous resistance to this, because, you know, people have said that this is somehow unscientific, which isn't the way I look at it. I say, well, there's so much unknown. In fact, science is always discovering what is yet to be known. Just the fact that we hadn't yet got a model at that stage didn't necessarily mean to me that this was unscientific. And in fact, you know, the book and my work since, and it has been in other directions as well on energy medicine, but specifically, I've kept an eye out for the science to catch up with us. And this century, the last 10 years has been extraordinary in the way that the scientific theory is coming to the party. And I find that very exciting. And that's what I try, as a working doctor, to interpret the science so it gives people, I said, some confidence in so many of these different modalities, not just ear acupuncture, but the whole raft of energy medicine.
Well, it's also the hologram in other parts of the body, because when you do acupuncture, you also can read pulses.
The pulse is a hologram which you can feel with your fingers. The tongue is a hologram you can see with your eyes. If people are doing reflexology, you know, you can massage the sole of the feet. You know, everybody has, you know, in the formal orthodox medicine has been very skeptical of iridology, for instance. But, you know, if you look, you will find information in the smallest part reflecting the largest part.
Right.
And that is one of the essential tenets of holographic theory.
I was teaching a class at one point, and I was joking around, and I said, at some point, they're going to find out how to read your lips, and every part of the body can be on your lips. And then somebody brought in a map that showed that.
Yes, and I've been to workshops where they've done that very thing. You know, but even in Fort Wayne's mainstream science, we've had DNA, which is capable of capturing all the information, energy, I believe, of the universe within the double helix. My work, I think, is to actually extend these concepts into, well, with language that people can understand, and people, so there's no divide between this type of science and the lives that they are living. And I suppose I'm interested in, how does this knowledge affect our daily lives? Is it going to enhance our lives, or is it just too much information? Is it great on the wow factor? But actually, what does it mean to every moment of our lives? And that's what I'm trying to explore.
Okay. Now, I really understand the desire to tackle this, but unfortunately for us, understanding holograms and the fractal nature of math and the golden mean and the Fibonacci series, which you talk about I think it's in the Human Antenna book, you understand, and we all understand that those of us who are familiar with those concepts, that it goes down to the nucleus of atoms that can hold the same information, because it's all fractal, because of the golden mean being such an ideal form, it allows form to fit in form to fit in form to fit in form.
Self-repeating patterns.
Right, exactly. Endlessly. So it's beyond our ability to actually to go all the way.
It is, and yet it is beyond our understanding, because we can only really start explaining this in the linear terms that we've been conditioned to. So, you know, so much of this is experience. You know, if one's a meditator or an intuitive, one will be picking up information that is non-linear. In other words, seems to be coming from a vast universal library, for instance.
Right.
I believe that more people, and I think your work in particular, and more people are understanding that they're able to do this, that it's not just a special number that can do it specifically, that they're all, in fact, intuition and feeling is primary to their lives, and in fact our rational thoughts are built on this more basic connection to what I would say would be a universal field of energy. You know, those are our feelings. People come to me as a doctor with feelings. They feel pain, they feel tired, they don't actually, and by listening, basically the art of listening is energy medicine. The art of listening seems to trigger off a deeper understanding. If two people are listening together, for instance, more insights seem to come in to the system as you're joined and you have this resonance between you.
Right.
I see listening and what we're doing now is energy therapy.
Good. Well, it seems that what you're getting at is that even though there are levels of this that we can't comprehend because it can, you know, it unfolds and unfolds and unfolds and, yes. and then folds and folds and folds, but all we need is one slice of it.
Yes.
And then we know the pattern of the whole.
Yes.
And so what you're looking at, this is what my sense is that what you're looking at with this listening and as I do with intuition, is if you can get to the profound nature of the moment,
yes,
you actually can hold the larger picture.
Yes,
not just smaller picture.
And add our rationality to this as well. I mean, we feel first, and then we add in our rationality, which is part of our evolution. So we have self-awareness about this. The model, right. I suppose the pervading model doesn't tend to suggest that. It tends to suggest that we work rationally, head down, if you like, rather than this wonderful cooperation between our feeling body, of which the heart seems to be the main, most powerful detector of feelings, how the heart and the head are in cooperation. But I think probably it would have to say in academic circles, the message really is that the head and the brain and the rationality and the linear thought controls everything else. And that is changing.
Well, fortunately,
very much a male Eurocentric view of us as a species.
Fortunately, I think we do have two sides to our brains, and maybe the right side, which isn't as linear, can actually dialogue with the heart and allow us then to express what our heart is saying.
Absolutely, and there is this sort of coherence between when we're in this theta or alpha modes, which is when we're in the more meditative mode, or when we're in the zone, or whatever when we're in the moment, where we know that there's this wonderful balance between head and heart, and our body comes, what was my previous book, or like a human antenna to this field. I also think that our rationality is a wonder as well, and I'm not trying to alienate that, because I think that in the past people have felt alienated because they feel, well, you know, this is getting so flaky that we're throwing our rationality out, we're losing our senses, we're losing our reason. I argue no, that this is a corporation between that, but in fact in the most basic sense we feel first we feel everything, all the decisions that we make in life, the major decisions, whether it's career or partnership or falling in love or whatever, going on holiday, comes from a feeling first. And then we apply our rational brain to work out how we're going to achieve that. Right. And that's how I possibly can, that's how people come to me. They come to me with their feelings. Then we sit down and we work out with our rationality. But first we have to listen to those feelings.
Right. There's a receptive part and then there's the strategic part.
Exactly. Wonderfully put.
Thank you. So, you know, the opportunities that you're creating, and one thing about you being a medical doctor by training and a voice of from the medical world means that you're no lightweight to begin with in terms of the past, in terms of tradition, and what people can expect to believe in to begin with. And then then you're taking it to the next level.
Yeah, I think I'm, you know, possibly my role is a bridge, as a bridge. And I mean, this work has made me prescribe far less medication. Nevertheless, I've had to be trained in all that, and I see there is need for medication at certain times. Most of the people that have come to me, I would say, are early adopters or advanced adopters of the concepts that we're talking about as well. They seem to have outgrown the idea that there has to be a pill for every ill, and that, you know, that the only way to look at us is seeing us as a bag of chemicals. They seem to have outgrown that. And I think my role is to help them help others within their family, if you like, to help adopt this understanding. Because ultimately it's about people owning their health and their lives. And this is the spin-off, which I suggest is the great spin-off from this work, is that it takes, gives the person power, but it gives the person ownership of their health. And it makes them, well, as parallel to this, they become aware and wondrous and curious about everything that's happening around them and in their lives.
Right. And
it's a wonderful state of being, isn't it? It's
sure.
A state of being truly alive.
I find that happens when I'm working with people intuitively, and I'm sitting
yes.
there not knowing them, and I'm giving them such detailed information about their lives that
yes.
they can't believe how I would know any of that. And
yes.
I always tell them, oh, I'm glad you're appreciating that, because then you understand that the information is held somewhere than just in your brain.
Yes.
And once you understand that there is this holographic universe and that I'm actually connecting with that to speak to you, then I'm showing you the opportunity of what you have also to see the world in new and more grander ways.
Although you're the medium for this, they are as well, and that's very empowering as well, to know that it's your... You may be reading this, but it's coming through them. It's filtering through them as well. And I think that's very, very empowering for them.
Yes, and that's one of the main reasons why I think I do my work, is to open people to the possibilities of a greater reality than they're familiar with. And
yeah,
you
and
do that, too.
I do that. And, from my observation over the years, we all do it in our own unique way. And we've all got, I think everybody has skills in intuition in their own particular way. I'm just always amazed by when we're meeting and we're confronted with a possibly difficult problem, and that if we sit in each other's space, how the answer can come if we don't grasp for it. It just seems to be that if we're just in a state of being together, the answers come. And in fact, that healing will come as well, probably from a dimensions beyond our four dimensions here. And that is, I suppose, this, we're gaining an understanding of that by this whole advances in quantum, what is quantum biology. And up until 10 years ago, the quantum realms were thought to, well, physicists were feeling, well, this is very interesting. It occurs in the very small, it occurs in the laboratory, but, there's no proof of this occurring in the human body. But that's all changed. That's all changed in the last 10 years, where it has been shown that to occur in living systems, particularly in photosynthesis. We know that there's quantum processes involved in that. And photosynthesis in plants is life-sustaining. Without that, we wouldn't be here. And one of the reasons this is being proved to occur at the temperatures of living beings and of plants has been through to our technology. And our technology is a reflection of our conscious growth as well. So, to me, there's somehow a collegiance between the advances in communication and technology and our consciousness that seems to be helping us here.
And all this needs a messenger, such as you and your book, The Human Hologram, to let people know that the reality that we're all starting to sense more of and new
yes.
realizations, how to hold that and believe in it. And
yeah.
I want to ask you if you think, in terms of your sensitivity and your hearing, is if music has played a big role in that.
Yes, I mean, I suppose in the last 20 years or so, I've always been interested in music, and I've always played to a certain extent anyway. When I became, I suppose I'd started to meditate and do Qigong, and alongside my understanding of Eastern practices, it seemed to open the door for songwriting. So it gave me an appreciation of how something can come into one in a fully formed way. The best songs seem to come, words and music together, as if it's all in a lovely package, as a complete package, including the middle eights and the instrumental breaks. They all seem to come the best ones seem to come together. But they also came upon a feeling that I think a song and music is pure feeling. And the best songs elicit a feeling in the listener that the composer has somehow it has come through the composer, filtered through the composer as well. That's what it is. So, I get great satisfaction out of that, but it also gives me a deeper understanding on this whole field. It gives me a personal connection to this whole field.
Well, it's also an understanding of how thinking works, and a lot of people think of thinking in a linear way.
Yes.
And what you're describing is a much more holistic, knowing way.
Yes.
That you actually see the big picture at one time, and then the parts make more sense.
Absolutely. And when you've written the song, it comes through. But you rationally have to get it into a form that you could maybe record. Or so there is a, you have to bring that other side in to make it real, to make it reproducible as well. So it honors both sides. The music, the great musicians, I think, will honor both sides of their brain. And the other thing is, I discovered that when you're writing words, and I'm sure you've discovered this, Peter, and I know poets do, they may not make sense at the time, but in the future they may make sense. It's almost like and I'm very comfortable with this, so I may write something down and say, it doesn't make any sense, but maybe 10 years later something happens and it makes a lot of sense. It's almost as if we're grasping, well, this is coming through from the future. But in fact, creativity could well come from the future, and it's almost sort of leading us on, guiding us in a gentle way with symbols and sounds and music to the future.
Many times I find that the universe reveals itself in its magic in ways that we learn in the process. I remember one time I was painting, and I was just kind of scribbling on paper, and it wasn't making any sense. And then I was done. I didn't know what I'd done. But then I turned the paper upside down, and it was a form that was very obvious.
Yes. And sometimes you might even turn that form upside down. You might just leave it somewhere for a number of years and then find it or approach it from another angle. And that's when it reveals itself. It's been a message. Yeah, it's a message, a nonlinear message.
Mm. Now, it's amazing that this hologram is always at work in our lives, and our consciousness is just learning to work with it.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not obviously just in shape and form, it's also in time and the cycles, the laws of five elements in Chinese medicine. It's all about that, how life cycles are evident everywhere, everything from the birth of a thought, the birth of a song, the birth of our own birth, the natural cycles of nature, the seasons, you name it. It's all holographically repeated in time as well.
Mm-hmm.
From the smallest moment to the longest eon.
But it's also interesting how the hologram reveals itself. Let's say people. You look at somebody.
Yes.
Their form represents the message of their beingness.
Yes.
And we look at it superficially. We look at people's form. We don't realize we're looking at an essence of their soul.
Absolutely. All of this, like valuing feelings, valuing intuition, reduces us wasting a lot of energy needlessly on searching, on blind searches of information. You know, it gives us a knowing that reduces down worry. And worry is such a major influence on poor health. We're worried, we blame, we self-criticize. All this internal language has a huge effect on our immune systems. And it's one of the reasons that we have this great growth of these autoimmune conditions now, and depression and others, all an inner dialogue. If we can discover that by looking and instant knowing and comfort that we can get this information instantly, in this day and age of information overload, we can become highly selective and not be overwhelmed by it. That's having a huge, will have a huge effect on our health.
Right. And what you're saying really is to stop and listen from that place, from a deeper essence place. What can I then hear? What messages can I hear about myself? What knowing can all of a sudden be sparked in me just from being quiet and being in the moment with it?
Exactly. I mean, everybody that comes to me, we have a session and simply listening to the breath or watching the breath down to the abdomen. Now, I don't believe any of these exercises should be complicated. In fact, you know, the simpler the better. And if that's all we achieve, we're achieving a lot, because it is an appreciation of that moment. I think we can be lost in the complexities of exercises, and we can have degree courses and very long workshops on complex exercises and complex meditations. From my experience, the simplest ones are the ones that are sustainable and mean the most. So touching on the moment, understanding when we're in that place of joy, or happiness, laughter, for instance, is the best energy medicine. Two people in harmony together, exactly in the moment, the lightheartedness that we introduce. That's why I think many of the teachers that I appreciate are lighthearted. They're humorous. They're not bogged down in heaviness there's a light. It's like the Dalai Lama, you know. He will say something very profound, but he'll go laugh afterwards, you know.
Right. There's a simplicity to it.
There's a simplicity and a humility as well.
Yes,
I mean, the other thing is that about this work is we have to be very humble that we're touching on this work, and yet there's so much more that we can know. There's so much that we don't know. But that is exciting, isn't it? That should create a state of wonder and excitement in us.
Right, and the more we can breathe it and feel it, the more that hologram reveals itself in unique and different ways.
And yes, and I mean, one of the things I try and approach is, well, look, you know, if we are formed on this field of information, and primary, there's consciousness as a primary and fundamental source in the universe, why are we here in this form? Why are we here in these dimensions? I suppose without giving too much away, we feed back into that field of consciousness through our actions and our good deeds.
Well,
so if we lead lives of intent, that we actually perform acts, because we're here to use these dimensions. We're here in the physical form to enjoy it,
and
but
respect
also
it,
to create through our acts the energy that feeds back into the field of consciousness, which allows it to grow. So, you know, one sees this world as that opportunity and a miracle. You know, when you start talking about these other dimensions, you can only come to the conclusion that the dimensions, the four dimensions in which we were, is an absolute miracle. And you start looking around and you say, wow.
We're running out of time, and I want to say that this is so uplifting. And, you know, this book and your work is here to enlighten us, to make us lighter, to make it simpler, to listen better, to relate to the essence. And I'm so glad that the Human Hologram has been written and is being published almost as we speak. And your name is Dr. Robin Kelly. How can people find you?
I suppose my website's drrobinkelly.com. That's drrobinkelly.com. And also The Human Hologram, thehumanhologram.com. You'll find me. For those who are waiting for the book, it's been a bit delayed. Thank you for being so patient. I promise you it's coming out very, very soon. I do welcome feedback. I'd love people to contact me via the website and give me feedback. That's how I learn and understand. And so thank you. And thank you, Peter. It's been wonderful.
It's been such a gift to talk with you. And I'm so glad that you're doing the work you're doing and have the awarenesses that you have to present this to the world and help us all know ourselves better. And thank you so much, Dr. Robin Kelly.
Thank you so much, Peter. Thank you.
Appreciate your being a guest on Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I can be reached at Peter at HeartRiver, HEART River.org. And thank you so much for listening.